Maine Calling's Your Vote 2020 coverage is brought to you by MEMIC, AARP of Maine, and the law offices of Joe Bornstein.
Democratic U.S. Senate candidate Sarah Gideon. Sarah Gideon defeated two other challengers in Maine's Democratic U.S. Senate primary in July. Now she is one of three candidates trying to unseat Republican incumbent Susan Collins in the general election. Gideon is currently Speaker of the Maine House of Representatives and has represented Freeport in the Maine House since 2012. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we continue our Your Vote 2020 conversations with the candidates for Maine's two congressional seats and U.S. Senate by speaking with Sarah Gideon. I'm joined by Maine Public senior political correspondent Mal Leary, and we welcome your questions by email, Facebook post, or tweet. Maine Calling's conversation with Sarah Gideon, Democratic candidate for United States Senate, next. But first, this news. This is Maine Calling, and I'm your host, Jennifer Rooks. Co-hosting with me today, Maine Public senior political correspondent, Mal Leary. Today on the program, a Your Vote 2020 conversation with Sarah Gideon. She is a Democrat and one of four candidates for United States Senate. We invite you to submit a comment or question to any of the candidates, including Sarah today. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post a comment to our Facebook page. We have already received many questions, so please, if you submit a question, be brief. Also, as you can hear, Maine Calling is now airing from 11 till noon. Please be sure to tune in each morning at 11. Our rebroadcasts remain at 7 p.m. And note that next week we're going to speak with the candidates running for Maine's two congressional districts. Again, we will not be taking live calls during those interviews, but we encourage you to leave us a voicemail in advance with your question for the candidates. And that number, 207-370-3487. Again, 207-370-3487. Tell us your first name and where you live. Sarah Gideon, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Good morning, Jennifer. Good morning, Mal.
And Mal, I'm going to have you ask the first question of Speaker Gideon.
Madam Speaker, Congress has provided billions of dollars to provide for personal protective devices for doctors, nurses, other medical care providers, yet supplies are still in short supply. In some cases, masks, gowns are being reused, even though their effectiveness, of course, decreases with use. Were you in the Senate today, what steps would you be taking to try to end those shortages?
Mal, thank you for that question, an incredibly important one as we head into these fall and winter months and as we see coronavirus cases across the nation and even in Maine rising again. I think one of the major challenges here is that we didn't respond in terms of manufacturing and a distribution and supply chain of personal protective equipment properly all the way back in the spring when COVID-19 first landed here. We still are not producing enough PPE right here in this country, and that puts us at a disadvantage as we continue to see numbers rise, not just here, but around the globe. So absolutely, I think what we need to do is to make sure that the federal government is actually implementing that help for manufacturing and then a supply chain that gets everywhere in the country to every state and to our healthcare providers who are on the front lines. I think there's nothing more important in fighting this public health virus besides that, as well as testing, contact tracing, and of course the administration of a safe eventual vaccine.
Sarah Gideon, you support a health care plan which would create a public option for Medicare so that private citizens could buy into Medicare for a reasonable cost. How would you pay for this?
Yes, I do support a public option. Look, as we know, there are people, and this was true before COVID-19, making terrible and impossible decisions about whether they were going to see a doctor or put food on the table. And now we see more people losing health care every day during the course of this pandemic. And unbelievably, even in the midst of that, continue to see a lawsuit brought forward by President Trump and national Republicans to take people's health care away. We need to do the exact opposite, and we need to make healthcare more available to people, and we need to figure out how we can lower the cost of that. I think the best way to do that is by creating a public option so that anybody who would like to be able to buy into Medicare can do that. But at the same time, we need to make changes to Medicare that will actually make it more effective. Now, first of all, I do want to point out that by putting Medicare as a public option, it is still something that people need to purchase as health insurance. We will want to think about how we can help people do that. Make sure that tax credits are generous enough so that lower income Mainers who are not, or Americans who are not eligible for Medicaid, would be able to think about how they can afford that. We would also want to think about how we could let the Medicare program do important things like negotiate directly with the pharmaceutical companies to lower the cost of prescription drugs for all of us.
Don't many of the people you're talking about, though, don't pay income tax anyway, or very much. So would tax credits really help them pay for this?
So we're talking, depending on which income level you are talking about, but thinking about the people who are between, for example, 130% of the poverty level and 200% of the poverty level, yes, I do think that would be very helpful for them.
Mel?
COVID-19 continues to hurt families, businesses. Congress has provided trillions of dollars for various programs that economists say have lessened the impact on the economy. But since the spring, it's been a gridlock in Congress. If you were a senator today, what would you do to try and end the impasse and provide some needed relief now?
Yeah, so you do point to something unfortunate that's happening now, which is that there has been an impasse for 5 months now. We've seen the House of Representatives pass two additional acts for more CARES Act funding to go to states and municipalities, tribal governments, to consider things like rent and mortgage relief for people, hazard pay for first responders and other essential workers. And meanwhile, we know that things are getting more dire. We look around, for example, here in the state of Maine, we see the governor looking at the idea of curtailments, fortunately have been able to do that in a way that doesn't affect programs and services thus far, but that is going to change at some point. Look, I think members of the Senate need to sit down and think about how they come together with people in mind, remembering, unfortunately, as President Trump did the opposite of this week, that this is not about politics now. This is about the desperation that many Mainers and many Americans feel as we do not have work functioning the same way, as people have lost their paychecks, and as the future of the economic recovery is uncertain because it is dependent on the future of our public health recovery. But I think absolutely the focus needs to be first and foremost on individuals and their families and the small businesses that support them and give them a paycheck, and making sure that we get that relief sent out to states and municipalities. As we know, there have been real strings attached to the funding that came in the past that has hampered our ability to make sure services continue to exist.
But what would you do to try to get the senators and the House to sit down and work something out? Because what we see is people agreeing on this part of a relief package or that part of a relief package, but no one seems to have come together and actually put a package together that could get the votes in both the House and Senate.
Yeah. Well, Mal, it's a very good question. And to answer that, I think I would look back to how I have done those kind of things in my times in the State House when the impasses seemed too great, and when it looked like there were just partisan divides keeping us apart. And I think the best way to do that is, number one, to look at your fellow representatives and senators and to try to find people who are representing states similar to yours, understanding the dire needs, for example, that rural states are facing that might not be experienced by everyone else, and beginning to build coalitions person by person, state by state in that way. I think the other thing, and the thing that is missing, we know right now in Congress, is the ability to see each other still as human beings and not as the enemy. And doing that, making sure that you are establishing relationships with people, asking them what they're most worried about for their family, for the people in their state, what they're most hopeful for, and ultimately finding out that, in fact, we do have the same goals.
Continuing on this theme, Speaker Gideon, of bipartisanship, you are campaigning on your record of working with Republicans as well as Democrats as a state representative and Speaker of the House. But as we all know, Washington is not Augusta. Other than COVID-19, what are some issues you see yourself effectively working across the aisle starting on day one?
Yes, thanks. That's something I'm thinking about every day. And I think about it particularly in terms of the challenges that Mainers are telling me that they are facing. Absolutely, without question, even before COVID-19, healthcare is what comes up in almost every conversation I have in almost every town that I'm in. People's worry about access to healthcare insurance, about the cost of it, people who live in rural areas worrying about whether their rural hospitals will be able to stay open. I look around the country. I look, for example, at Tennessee and Senator Alexander there and how he has legislation that's focused on saving rural hospitals. I think that is a tremendous opportunity to bring not just the two of us together, but many other senators who are in similar positions in rural states. I think, for example, about Senator Portman in Ohio, who is pushing for more broadband money and acceleration of expanding broadband, something we desperately need here in Maine, making sure our kids can learn remotely, that people can work remotely, build their businesses, scale their businesses up, even thinking about how we want to welcome people after COVID-19 who are thinking they no longer want to live in a city, but they would love to live and work in a place like Maine. So those are some of the opportunities, just a few that I see in front of us.
Mel.
This Senate race has set a couple of records, the most expensive and the most negative in state history. Many Mainers are expressing absolute disgust at the overwhelming amount of negative ads, both by your campaign and by Senator Collins' campaign. Why are you using what appears to be mostly negative ads in your campaign?
Now, I want to first acknowledge that it is a really, really challenging situation, I think, for Mainers to be in, to have so much focus on this Senate race, and also want to acknowledge that there is too much money in politics, which creates all of these ads, and that is something that we have to change. And that is why, at the very beginning of my campaign, one of the first things that I began talking about and making plans about was how we actually reform things, making sure that we do things like overturn Citizens United, that we pass bills like the Disclose Act, which would actually make transparent the donors who we right now think of as the dark money and fueling all those dark money ads and negative ads that are running on TV. I think we all agree that things need to change, and I want to make clear that I think so too. Look, in this campaign, we have tried to do a couple of things. First and foremost, most importantly, to listen to Mainers. And that's why I have, with the exception of the few weeks that we were forced to be under stay-at-home order, traveled all around the state. We've held more than 33 suppers with Sarah, which is our version of a town hall where people can come and ask us any question they want to, and where anybody in the state can have the sense and feeling that I have been where they live and that they were able to come see me. And that's really what wanting to represent someone is about, making ourselves available, answering questions, and most important, listening. Now, there is the piece of the campaign that also is about advertising and what we've tried to focus on in our ads, whether in however we categorize them, are the voting records of Susan Collins, exactly how she has been on multiple sides of issues, and also her ties to special interests. And we think it's important for Mainers to understand that after 24 years.
But is it leadership saying, I want to do what I want to do and not have such a negative tone? I mean, the tone of these ads, Madam Speaker, is not just to the policy positions, but it's the use of images. I mean, you look like a ghoul at times in some of the Collins ads, and she looks pretty bad in some of your ads. It all seems to be trying to create this very, very, very negative impression of the candidate that's well beyond the question of where you disagree on issues.
Well, Mal, I think the only thing that I can say in answer to that is I definitely see a series of ads that come from the Collins campaign and outside groups that are very negative. And I think I don't need to repeat your words to describe exactly how, for example, they've depicted me, but I do think that there is a distinct difference in the nature of the ads that you're seeing.
Speaker Gideon, what do you see as the greatest foreign threat to our nation, and what do you believe we ought to do about it?
This is a question I wish came up more often. It is something that, unfortunately, over the past 4 years has put us in a much more dangerous position because of this president, the way that he seems to unilaterally make decisions without consulting the people around him through diplomacy, through military expertise or national security expertise, and as a result has made us much less safe. We've seen our country pull out of agreements like the Iran nuclear agreement. We've seen us pull out of the Paris Climate Accord. We have additionally seen this president really flirt with very dangerous leaders around the world, whether it is in Russia or North Korea or Iran. And I think that puts not just us in the U.S. at risk, but in fact, the entire country at risk. What we need to think about and focus on with the next administration are a couple of things. Number one, we need to think about how we rebuild trust around this world and trust with our allies. And we need to think about how we rebuild coalitions to deal with our greatest threats. Now, I think our greatest threats absolutely are obvious when we think about some of the countries out there like Russia or China, North Korea and Iran, but I also think we need to think about what our policy is and what we want to go after and approach. For example, understanding that in the modern world, foreign policy includes cybersecurity. It includes making sure that the existing nuclear arsenal in the world is actually safely maintained and not going to put us in additional danger. Thinking about how in the modern world also, issues like the climate crisis and public health are actually part of our foreign policy as well. And so on that note, would want to consider or not consider, but immediately see us do things like rejoining the World Health Organization and the Paris Climate Accord.
We're speaking with House Speaker Sarah Gideon, who is a candidate for U.S. Senate. I'll have Mal ask a follow-up question to that. But first, we do need to take a break. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from MEMIC. With a mission to improve workforce safety and injury management and a goal of sending millions back to the Maine economy, AARP Maine, providing information on voting from home with absentee ballots, aarp.org/mainevotes, and the law offices of Joe Bornstein, a statewide practice representing injured and disabled Mainers since 1974, joebornstein.com.
I'm Tanya Mosley. The image of 20,000 empty black chairs near the White House over the weekend is a striking reminder of just some of the many lives that have been lost to COVID-19. Naya Kuspa lost her father just 2 weeks ago, and she worries Americans are becoming numb. She responds to President Trump's urging the public not to be afraid. That's next time on Here and Now.
And that's coming up today at noon here on Maine Public Radio. In this election year, Maine is in the national spotlight more than ever, and Maine Public News has you covered with the weekly Maine's Political Pulse podcast, available online at mainepublic.org. There's also the Political Pulse newsletter, which is delivered straight to your inbox on Friday mornings. You can subscribe to the Political Pulse newsletter right now at mainepublic.org/pulse, or by clicking the mainepublic.org news dropdown at the top of the page, and then selecting Maine Political Pulse.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Sarah Gideon, who is the Democratic candidate for United States Senate. She's our guest. She joins me and Maine Public's Mal Leary for a conversation about her stance on the issues that matter to you. You can share your comments or questions by email, talk@mainepublic.org, post a tweet at Maine Calling, or comment on our Facebook page. Please note, we are not taking calls during today's program. Before the break, we were talking about foreign policy. And Mal, did you have a follow-up question for Speaker Gideon?
Yeah, in terms of foreign policy, probably the most important question you may ever have to vote on as a senator is when to use military forces. What are your criteria for going to war? And do you see a global trouble spot out there that might come sooner than later?
Yeah, so this is a question I think that one needs to be asking themselves in advance. And without question, the United States always has to be prepared to defend ourselves. But that being said, I think we should only go to war as an absolute last resort. You know, I know I already mentioned this, but I think it is worth talking about again that Donald Trump has made so many irresponsible and erratic decisions around foreign policy that are making us less safe and secure. And we need to be more thoughtful about our approach to foreign policy. We need to use diplomacy so that we can actually avoid being in a position to the greatest extent possible when we are asking ourselves whether or not we go to war. But there's one other thing that I just want to mention in this, because, you know, it was really at the forefront of conversations back months ago, and this was around the authorization of the use of military force and whether that 2001 authorization, should still be able to be used. And as we know, there was a resolution passed, which was vetoed. And I do think that we absolutely need Congress as a separate but equal branch of government to reassert its authority and make sure that we cannot just have a chief executive who is unilaterally making decisions that put us in danger.
All right, we're going to go to a voicemail now that came in. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mal.
Well, I was going to say, where do you see the next trouble spot developing? Because we certainly have a number of places around the world now that conflicts are already underway.
Definitely. So I think we have to have our eye on a number of places simultaneously, without question. But I do also think that probably our two greatest threats that we need to be paying attention to are both China and Russia. And we see Chinese aggression, for example, in the South China Sea. We also see their aggression in cyberspace, which is, again, something that I'm not sure is on the forefront of everyone's minds, but incredibly dangerous to us and others in the world. We need to also think about situations that China is involved in terms of, for example, their treatment of the Uyghur people. In terms of Russia, we absolutely know that Vladimir Putin's objective is to try to weaken the United States, and he's doing that successfully, unfortunately, driving a wedge between us and our allies and even sowing divisions within our own country and interfering in elections. And we absolutely have to be vigilant about both of these countries.
All right, we're going to go to a voicemail that came in before the program. This is from George.
Hi, this is George from Camden. With wildfires in the West and the drought here in Maine, we're already feeling the effects of climate change. What will you do in the Senate to address climate issues?
I really appreciate that question from George, and I absolutely agree that we are feeling the effects of climate change. We are seeing it across the globe. We are seeing it literally across our country on the West Coast with wildfires, with the number of hurricanes and the slow way that they move causing more damage. And of course, we're feeling it right here in the state of Maine, where the Gulf of Maine is warming faster than 99% of the world's oceans, where we are experiencing record high temperatures in the summer for years in a row. And of course, we know we're experiencing a drought right now that affects our livelihoods and our future and our food production. So we need action. It needs to be bold and immediate. I look at what we've done here in Maine under my leadership, the leadership of Governor Mills and President Jackson as well, bipartisan work to set aggressive goals to lower carbon emissions and also increase renewable energy generation. Unfortunately, it is not enough to do this state by state. We need real leadership on the federal level so that we can be a leader within the world as well and actually make the difference that we need to lower carbon emissions drastically. I think opportunities in front of us in our own country will include the transportation industry, the building industry, the energy industry, and it is going to take a concerted effort from all of us and also the understanding that if we deal with this up front, we can turn it into an economic opportunity and avoid the costs that are coming fast at us.
Mel.
When you talk about getting at that carbon emissions, there's lots of talk about a carbon tax, which, of course, would raise the cost of gasoline, diesel, and you're being attacked for that in some of your opponents' ads. How do you address that question? Can we get there without using taxing as a method?
I think that we can, and I think this is exactly what we need to explore. You know, there was just a study done recently, actually, for the Climate Council here in Maine. And one of the things that study explored was the cost of climate change and the fact that even here in our state of Maine in the northeast corner, that the cost of climate change is going to be more expensive than we can afford and that we need to do something proactively to avoid that cost. Now, when we think about issues and ways of doing things, I think one of the major challenges that we are going to have to face is how we lower carbon emissions without hurting individuals and families and their pocketbooks. In other words, we have to find a way that we are incentivizing different behavior and also making sure that as we change behavior, people are still able to, you know, put food on the table and pay for their doctor's visits and pay their rent and things like that. And it, I do think, is going to be challenging for us. I would like to find a way, and it will be my priority to find a way to do it in a way that does not hurt our individual families in Maine and across the country.
I have an email here from Melanie. I have lots of questions about the state lawmaker that was accused of sexual activity with his students. After reading the Ballard that the lawmaker admitted to inappropriate sexual conduct, I'm confused and concerned. Ms. Gideon frequently charges Susan Collins with being insufficiently pro-women's rights, but Gideon heard credible accusations from female students about the state lawmaker's conduct and she didn't act. Does she believe women or doesn't she?
So, Melanie, I'm glad you brought this up because it is a narrative that is being pushed by Senator Collins and her campaign, and it's just false. And I was able to hear, even from the wording of your question, that the presentation of it has left you with things that are simply not true. So let me be clear about what happened there. First of all, I want you to know that as the mother of three children, a middle school girl, and two high school boys, the safety of children is the most important thing to me. And I have spent my personal life and also my time in the state house making sure that we are passing laws to make people more safe. Now, when there was an actual individual that came forward and said that there had been, and it was even at that time still anonymous, but any accusation at all that came from an individual about that lawmaker, I immediately moved and asked for his resignation. And anything that is being said otherwise is simply false.
Mal.
But, Madam Speaker, I remember speaking with you about this issue when the rumors first surfaced about Representative Bates. And at that point in time, there was a lot of discussion about what you should do as Speaker. And you gave what I thought was a pretty good explanation that he hadn't been charged and no one had come forward. Why aren't you making such a strong statement now?
Mal, there were no individuals. There was nothing until that Ballard article was actually published that said that individuals had come forward to that reporter. And before that, there was nothing but a rumor. And so, look, at that point, we needed to see and hear from someone. And when we did, as soon as we did, I immediately asked for his resignation.
We'll go to another voicemail that came in before the program. This is from Kathy.
Hi, my name is Kathy, and I'm calling from Vassalboro. And I'm questioning why Sarah Gideon voted against protecting the right to hunt and fish in 2013. Was what we thought to be a very important constitutional amendment, and she was one of the deciding votes to kill it. Thanks so much.
So I will have to go back and look at the bill in question that you're talking about. It is not on my radar at the moment, and I just like to make sure that I know exactly what someone is asking me about in order to answer. So I sincerely apologize. We do have about 2,000 bills in front of the legislature in every two-year session. And so I just would have to get more information to answer that.
Why don't we take Kathy's question then as an opportunity to just ask you, Speaker Gideon, your views on hunting and fishing in Maine?
Thank you. I appreciate that, Jennifer. So I, first of all, absolutely support people's right to hunt and fish in the state of Maine. It is not only a part of our culture, it is also part of who we are. It is part of how people literally put food on the table and raise their children and spend time with their family. So I fully support hunting and fishing, and I do know that there have been numerous occasions where we've had legislation in the State House that I have supported and voted for that makes sure that we are making that more available for people and protecting it for generations to come.
I have a tweet here from Rob. My cousin is a legislator and said that Gideon called Republicans terrorists in 2018 after they opposed tax increases. I looked it up and it's true. Can Sarah explain why she said that? I saw a Gideon ad yesterday in which she touts she's bipartisan. So I'd like to understand better how both things can be true.
Well, Rob, thank you for clarifying and asking that question. There are so many things being said in this race, and oftentimes without the context to understand. So first, I want to start by saying that I did have a moment after a very long series of days and frustration about being able to continue our work when my Republican colleagues voted not to keep the legislature in session and to continue working. And I did say about Governor LePage that I thought his actions were indicative of that type of behavior, not actually calling him or anybody a terrorist, to be clear. But I also want to just point out that I did immediately apologize. You know, sometimes as human beings, we say things or do things in a moment of extreme fatigue or disappointment or discouragement. And definitely at that moment, that's how I was feeling. But I also recognized immediately that it wasn't the way that I wanted to talk. And so I apologized. And that is the kind of behavior you can always expect from me.
Mal.
Could you name a single issue of which you see yourself voting against the wishes of your party leadership, and why?
Yes, great question. I think talking about a single issue is maybe more challenging than talking about how we do things and how we put things together. Look, you can see my record over 8 years in the State House and 3 years even on the Freeport Town Council and know the things that I care about and the reasons why I make decisions and why I take the votes I do. Whether it was taking on the opiate epidemic, whether it was protecting and expanding reproductive health care, whether it was picking up the pieces, even as we see this lawsuit heading for oral arguments to take away people's health care in the Supreme Court, making sure that we were protecting people with pre-existing conditions. These are all the issues that I'm going to fight for. It doesn't mean that I will always be in the same position as my colleagues in the Senate or as leadership in any given legislative session. I will always be looking for the way to make progress for us as Mainers and for us as Americans, making sure that we are combating climate change, lowering the cost of prescription drugs, protecting Social Security and Medicare, and expanding access to health care. And I will be voting for those issues for people, but when I think that the bills in front of us aren't good, no matter who says what about it or what position they're in, I'm going to be doing what's right for Mainers.
We are going to take another quick break. We're speaking with Speaker Sarah Gideon, who is running for U.S. Senate. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling, with help from the law offices of Joe Bornstein, who believe that voting rights are the cornerstone of democracy. Learn more at vote.org/state/Maine. MEMIC, with a mission to improve workforce safety and injury management, and a goal of sending millions back to the Maine economy. And AARP Maine, providing information on voting from home with absentee ballots, aarp.org/MaineVotes.
On October 8, 1918, Maine Governor Carl Elias Milliken announced that every precaution should be taken to prevent further spread of the influenza epidemic, and he suggested that all places of amusement be closed. There is no occasion for panic among our citizens. Maine has, so far, been fortunate, and the disease has not gained great headway except in a few localities. A native of Pittsfield, Milliken left office on January 5, 1921. The following year, he became executive secretary and chief spokesman of the Motion Picture Producers and Distributors Association, later the Motion Picture Association of America, the movie industry's first self-censorship body.
On This Day in Maine's History was created in partnership with the Maine Historical Society and made possible through the generous support of DN Wealth Advisors and the Maine Seacoast Mission. Happy birthday, Maine.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Maine Public's political correspondent Mal Leary is in Augusta co-hosting with me today. And today on our program, a Your Vote 2020 discussion with Sarah Gideon. She is running as a Democrat for U.S. Senate. We're going to go to another voicemail. This is Richard.
Hi there. My name is Richard, and I'm from live in Sydney, Maine. One of the questions that I had for the candidates, especially Speaker Gideon, I'm an undecided voter and have many farmers in my family, and you know, also understand the value of our fisheries to the state economy. My question for Speaker Gideon, and I'm genuinely curious, would be, you know, what has the Speaker done on behalf of our farmers and our fishermen during her time in the legislature, and what commitments would she make to continuing to support them in the future? Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Richard, for your question, and thank you for being such a thoughtful voter looking to understand more about the issues. So during my time in the State House, have worked hard to make sure that I understand what is happening for farmers in our community and supporting small farms, working particularly closely with someone in your neck of the woods who is a small farmer, Representative Craig Hickman, for example, passing legislation and resolutions around right to food and making sure that we are thinking about for farmers who are raising livestock and meat, making sure that we are ensuring that the process for slaughtering is easy and that those farmers are able to stay in business. Now, looking outside of the state of Maine to the federal government and what I want to do, I think I would want to focus absolutely on making sure that our small farms in Maine get the same sort of benefits, consideration, and help that we see the biggest farms around the country getting. We know that we want to actually boost our food production here in the state of Maine, making sure that we get closer to where we used to be, where we were producing more of the food that we consume. I think that there are ways to do that that will include making sure that there are short-term loans available in times of drought like we have right now, making sure that we are doing research and development to help with drought resistance since we know that is going to be in our future with climate change, thinking also about what sort of insurance programs that could be available for small farmers and small crop farmers, for example, with extreme weather. So those are some of my ideas around farming, and in fishing have been very, very vocal through the past year in standing up for lobstermen in the state of Maine, declaring that the rules that NOAA has issued are not based on any data, and they are very potentially damaging to our fishermen. This is something I will continue to do on the federal level, but also thinking about how we make sure we have fair trade practices and tariffs in terms of specifically thinking about our competition with Canadian fishermen and also making sure that markets are open to receive our lobster and other fisheries as well.
So would you seek to serve on the Agriculture Committee, or do you think that that some of these issues you're talking about move into other areas of the U.S. Senate where you would seek to serve on those committees?
Yeah, this is another question that I'm asking myself all the time. I think as a senator, without question, I want to make sure that through committee work and other work, I am able to both focus on our greatest challenges that are shared by Mainers and other Americans, for example, around healthcare and climate change, but also to make sure that I am focused on our core industries, livelihoods, and way of life here. So I think in terms of two of the committees that I would be most interested in serving on, Environment and Public Works and Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions would definitely be at the top of the list. I would also think about agriculture, fisheries, armed services, and veterans affairs as well.
All right. Speaker Gideon, we have a lot of questions coming in about taxes. I'll take this one from Roy. This is an email. He writes, I'm about to be a college graduate in one of the worst job markets in years, and I'm going to need all the money I can get. Would you commit to no tax increases if you're elected senator?
I think that was Roy that was asking that question, Jennifer.
Yes.
Roy, thanks for that question. And this is a really tough time to be coming out of school. I absolutely agree. We need to be doing everything possible to support you and the people that are coming after you. So I want to start just by saying that we absolutely have to focus on the high cost of higher education. And that means looking at programs that can help colleges actually reduce the cost and lower the amount of debt that students come out with. also think about, for somebody like you who's finishing college, how we can make refinancing of loans easier to do and tied to your income level. And in terms of taxes, look, I know what I want to focus on. I think about the 2017 tax bill that was passed that gave a nearly $2 trillion tax cut to corporations, to some of the wealthiest individuals and families in this country. There are, for example, 90 companies like Amazon, Delta Airlines, that pay $0 in taxes while someone like you struggles. And repealing that to make sure we can invest in people like you will be my priority.
Mel.
So would you talk about though tax increases? You would be willing to support some tax increases, such as that is proposed by Vice President Biden, and that is tax people over $400,000 a year.
I do know that is specifically the president's plan. I do not have a plan to raise taxes on people specifically according to their income, but I will tell you this. I don't think the wealthiest are paying their fair share. I think we've continued to see them get tax breaks that widen the gulf between them and the rest of America, and I do think that needs to be fixed.
All right, we're going to go to another voicemail. This is from Abby.
Hi, my name is Abby, and I am an undergraduate student from Bar Harbor. Sarah has stated that she is a strong advocate of a woman's right to make her own healthcare decisions and shape her own future, and a strong advocate for Planned Parenthood and other providers of family planning and reproductive health services. I wonder, what political strategies does Sarah intend to employ upon election in order to safeguard these rights, as they are not as simple as being an advocate, they're very political. And it's a very contentious issue, especially now.
Abby, thanks for that question. And yes, I have spent a significant amount of my time in the State House actually making sure, first, that we were protecting a person's right to choose and a woman's access to abortion, for example. And then in the past 2 years, instead of being on the defensive around that, thinking about how we could strengthen and protect reproductive health care and reproductive health care rights. And we did that in two ways. Number one, making sure that insurance companies would pay for that reproductive care. And number two, making sure that all of the healthcare providers that were qualified to perform that healthcare and abortions specifically were able to do that. That's exactly the kind of work that I will continue to do in the Senate. I think that any person's ability to control their future and to control their economic well-being and well-being overall is absolutely dependent on their ability to make their choices around family planning. I think the absolute first thing that we have to do with a new president and a new Senate is to reverse the gag rule that was put in place by this president, which actually inhibits a doctor's ability to communicate with their patients and to treat them. And additionally, we have to look at what's happening in the judiciary to understand that in the past 4 years, this judiciary very purposefully has been moved far to the right by President Trump, by Mitch McConnell, and with Senator Collins' aid. And we need to think about how we restore a judiciary that is independent again, that doesn't come with a political agenda, for example, an agenda to change a precedent that has been set, like Roe versus Wade.
All right. Speaker Gideon, I'm going to ask a question that was raised by the Bangor Daily News editorial that endorsed Senator Collins. It focused on seniority and the fact that Senator Collins, with her seniority, has a lot of power in the Senate. How do you address that? People who think, well, you know, I kind of like both of them, but I like the idea of having Maine represented by somebody who has seniority.
So I'm really glad that you asked this question, because I think what all of us are looking for when we think about who represents us is somebody who is going to stand up for us no matter what and stand up for our interests, somebody who is going to stand up for what is right and stand up to somebody who is doing something wrong. And yes, I do mean President Trump when I say that. And somebody who is going to find a way to get things done. Look, there's two important things to focus on here as I answer this question. The first is that I have worked most of my time in the legislature under the most difficult of circumstances and with a former chief executive, former governor, who called himself Trump before Trump, whose mission it was to divide people and to stop us from getting work done. But one of the things that I learned about myself is that I always was continually looking for the next path to create every time a door closed in front of me. And that's why we were able to actually get things done again and again, whether it was taking on the opiate crisis, whether it was protecting health care, whether it was passing legislation to increase renewable energy generation. And unfortunately, we don't see that happening in Washington, and we don't see that happening from Senator Collins. I know that on this campaign trail, Senator Collins likes to talk about her seniority and the power that that brings. And yet when we think about the fact that, you know, we have this health care law now in jeopardy, literally millions of Americans are going to have their health care taken away potentially by the Supreme Court decision, which was enabled by Senator Collins' key vote on the tax bill. When we think about the fact that prescription drug costs are absolutely out of control, here in Maine, we rolled up our sleeves and did everything we could to take on the insurance industries and to lower costs. When we think about the fact that, you know, as we talked about earlier in the hour here, it has been 5 months since additional coronavirus relief was passed. If 24 years of seniority doesn't enable you to actually make a difference on these issues, then what does 24 years of seniority give to us as Mainers?
Mal, we have about a minute left.
Let's go to a quick question back to Abby's point from Bar Harbor. I think what she's trying to get at is some of the folks that support Planned Parenthood, for example, have argued we should add two more justices to the Supreme Court if indeed Judge Barrett is confirmed and converts the majority on the court to a solid conservative one. Do you think that's something as a strategy that should be considered?
About 30 seconds.
Oh, very quick. Okay. So I think, first of all, that I will do everything in my power as a senator legislatively to protect reproductive rights and make them stronger. In terms of the judiciary, here is my goal. I want an independent, non-politicized judiciary restored. And right now, every proposal that I see put forward is put forward within this framework of left versus right, Democrat versus Republican, one-upping each other. I'm not interested in that. I want to see us get back to government that works, every one of the three branches of government doing that, and that includes an independent judiciary. I will look at any proposal, but I will look at it through that lens.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Sarah Gideon, the Democratic candidate for U.S. Senate and sitting Speaker of the Maine House. And tomorrow we can continue our series of Your Vote 2020 interviews. Mal and I will be speaking with Republican candidate Susan Collins. Again, that's at 11 in the morning. If you have a voicemail question, the number 207-370-3487. Leave your first name and where you live. Today's sound engineer was Lucy Suchek. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.